Welcome, welcome, welcome everyone to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by thehockeythinktank.com. It's a website for anybody that loves hockey and wants to learn a little bit more about the game. At the website, we've got blogs, we've got videos, we've got webinars, anything you need to get a little bit better, whether you're a parent, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach. If you love hockey, I think this is the website for you. And in today's podcast episode, we chat with one of the top sports writers in the hockey world right now, Craig Custance. Craig is the editor-in-chief at The Athletic Detroit, and if you aren't subscribed to The Athletic right now, you are totally missing out. It's next to nothing as far as a cost standpoint, but the content that you get from videos to breakdowns to just what's going on in the game right now, and even if you're not a hockey lover, if any other sport, the content that they have is unreal. But Craig's the editor-in-chief of The Athletic Detroit. He also has his own podcast called The Full 60 Podcast, where he brings in and interviews a ton of high-level people in the game. And, you know, he's one of the best hockey writers in the game right now. So before we get to Craig's talk, let's bring in my partner in here, Jeff LaVecchio. Jeff, what's happening today?
It's a beautiful day in St. Louis. That's what's happening.
Beautiful day in St. Louis. Probably not as good as Chicago or upstate New York, but we'll make do.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. No.
So what did you think about the talk with Craig? I mean, holy cow, was that some unbelievable insight into the media side of the game, huh?
Yeah, it was really cool getting to talk to, you know, one of the guys who you and I, I'm sure, you know, we've been interviewed by a lot of people in our careers, and interesting to ask him some questions. Just, you know, have you ever gotten any blowback from an interview, or, you know, who do you like talking to and why? And kind of his idea on breaking the mold of the cliche answers that I feel like so many hockey players have had for so many years, and kind of where he would like players to be with their comfortability level on answering those questions, not the same old answers. Oh, the team did good, so we did good. Boring. It's nice to hear kind of his thoughts on.
Yeah,
on
he had a great story about Drew Doughty too. Yeah, that was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, it's a relationship business for sure. So it was interesting to hear him talk about navigating certain relationships and getting information that he can use and maybe even can't use. So yeah, he's a great guy. Again, his content at The Athletic Detroit. If you're a Red Wings fan, I mean, this is where you go to get your Red Wings news and get your insights. So Craig's a great guy. Again, and we're really fortunate to have him on the pod. So, Craig, we're thrilled to have you here on the podcast. I have to ask you first, it's got to be tough covering Detroit sports right now. What is going on in the city of Detroit, and what is it going to get fixed anytime soon in all the sports?
It's real. You know, we laugh because we launched a new sports media company in Detroit at probably the worst possible time over the last 25 years. Like, there. And it's a credit to the fans in Detroit that things are gone as well as it has for us. And the interest is high because the teams are not helping us. Like, they're just awful. But, you know, what we've kind of just changed our coverage and gone a lot of prospect heavy and looking to the future and analysis of rebuilds and looking at other rebuilds. And the fan base here is into it. But there's no, like, we were debating, like, which of the four major teams wins a playoff game first. You're hitching your wagon to the Detroit Lions, and you know, I've been living in this town a long time, and I barely remember the last playoff win.
I don't think I've heard anyone say that in a while. Hitching their wagon to the Lions.
Ay.
But you know, it's really bad for the Red Wings right now. I would say, of all the teams, I don't know baseball enough to know exactly where the Tigers are at, but from just knowing hockey and how much parity there is in the league, this is going to be a horrible year for the Red Wings. But if they can get lucky, like, you need in a rebuild, you need a stroke of luck. And let's say they get Jack Hughes. Now things look dramatically different for the Red Wings because you're moving everybody down in terms of the prospects. You're slotting them in the right place. In theory, you're making Dylan Larkin a second-line center eventually instead of a first-line center. Like, those are significant franchise-altering moments. And so one of these teams needs to have that lucky kind of generational player come through to really propel them.
Yeah, we live here in upstate New York, or I live here in upstate New York, and, you know, the Sabres getting Rasmus Dahlin, I mean, that could be I mean, it's everything. So you look at all the teams that have won Stanley Cups in the recent history, they've all had the Crosbys, the Canes, the guys that have been drafted that high. And so, yeah, hopefully they can do okay. But I actually grew up a Red Wings fan. I grew up in Chicago back in the days when they weren't putting any home games on TV or anything like that, and they were terrible. So kind of hitched my wagon to the Wings. But yeah, hopefully they can get it settled. But you mentioned that you know, you've been in Michigan for a long time. You graduated from Michigan State in 1999, kind of in the Ron Mason heyday.
Yeah.
So what was that like going to Michigan State at that time? Did you cover hockey while you were there? And just tell us a little bit about your experience there.
Yeah, so my coverage of the hockey team, I was at that point, I was still figuring out what I wanted to do. Like, I knew I wanted to be in sports media. I didn't know if I wanted to do radio or TV or print. And so my experience was, I did television covering Michigan State, and I was like production, like behind the scenes. And there was a little like public access TV station, I think it was called WELM, that would televise all the Michigan State hockey games. And I was the guy that, it was this really archaic equipment, and I was rewinding manually to do replays, and they would just cut to it live. I'm still rewinding.
It was that's unbelievable.
It was unbelievable. And it was crazy. Like, it was good because I have a huge respect for people that are doing this in real life, because it was so stressful. They're like, you know, camera two, replay, you're live. And I'm like, I still don't have this thing teed up. And so I did a full season of that. And it was fun because you're right, it was Ron Mason era. The team was good. It was, I'm trying to think who would have been there, like Anson Carter, Mike York. Just some really, Anson Carter, at the time, I'm like, this guy's going to be a superstar in the league. Like, you just would watch him dominate at that level. And it, yeah, you know, it, of course, had a really good career. And so it was a fun time to be doing, working behind the scenes in hockey there.
Yeah, for sure. And you've worked your way up to one of the top people in your profession right now. But can you talk to us a little bit about your early days and getting into sports journalism, especially the hockey world, and just some of the things that you've learned along the way? Because I would imagine, you know, just talking about rewinding the VHS tapes way back in the day, I would imagine that the things that you're doing now are a lot different than back then from this standpoint. So talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you guys know how it is. It's a grind, and you don't wake up with the job you want, right, at 23. And so I spent the first few years out of college working at the Atlanta newspaper, at the Journal Constitution, just doing whatever they would ask. So I was, you know, working on our website. They just had launched their website, so I was, you know, posting stories because nobody else knew how to do it. And I just was the young kid that knew how to operate, you know, the internet, and knew a little bit of coding. And so they're like, okay, have at it, kid. Because they didn't care. They were worried about the newspaper. So I was doing that. And that was fun to kind of start that from scratch. And at the same time, I was like, look, I want to be at games. I want to be covering sports. And the sports department was stacked. Like, it was kind of at the newspaper heyday, right before kind of Craigslist gutted the classified. So it was like peak newspaper. So we would put off this Sunday sports section that read like a book, and we had a million writers. And so I was like, whatever you guys can give me to do, I'll do. And they would send me to, you know, across the state to volleyball games and track meets. And it really, in retrospect, it was such a great way to learn the profession. I did that for a number of years where my writing was so bad, and I really had to learn from scratch and study the people that were good writers. And I'm glad that my stuff I was writing at 24 wasn't read by more than, you know, a few parents, right? Like, because it was, you're learning, and you're learning how to operate in that world and develop relationships with coaches and athletes and how to interview and tell a compelling story. And so it really was a great, I don't know if that world exists anymore because newspapers are so gutted that they don't. We had a high school prep staff of like 10 to 12 full-time writers. I'm sure that doesn't exist. And it's neat. Like, we just, at The Athletic, we hired a writer named Michael Lee, who is a national NBA writer. He was at Yahoo. And Michael Lee was, we were both doing the same thing at the same time in Atlanta. Like, he was covering one county. I was covering another county. And there was three or four of us that have gone on to, you know, bigger things. And it was a great training ground, and did that for a number of years, then started doing college football and was doing NFL. And then the Thrashers were getting to be relevant, like right around the time that I kind of was establishing myself as a young writer. They were making a playoff run, and so they needed help on that beat, and I pitched in and took it from there and got that job full time, and And that was really what established myself in the hockey world.
When you say developing relationships, is that something that's hard to do with, like, to get a coach or a player to trust you and you know, on the record, off the record, all that kind of stuff? Is it hard to navigate what lines you need to work with them as far as what you can say and not without offending them, but then they still want to talk to you the next time?
Right. So I've always played the long game with sources or those relationships where, you never want to burn a guy. You want to earn their trust. There's some on the record, off the record, there's kind of hard and fast journalistic rules. And so, for instance, if you say something to me and we're on the phone and you say, "Oh man, but don't use that. That was off the record." You know, technically in the journalistic world, you know, we have to establish that beforehand. And so, like, there would be, you know, some kind of hardcore writers would say, "Nope, sorry, you know, we were on the record. You can't retroactively go off the record." But like, if I'm talking to a coach where I'm like, "Well, I'm going to need this guy to talk to me for the next 15 years," like, right, you have to pick your battles. And so that it did take a long time to navigate that, because even something like off the record, it technically means something different than on background. And sometimes a hockey coach or a high school coach or even a writer, a young writer, doesn't know the difference. And I'm not sure I could even articulate it now. And so it's funny. Like, I'm working on a piece now for The Athletic and about the free agent class. And so, I'm calling agents and you negotiate, like, "Look, you know, do you want to be quoted in this? Do you not want to be, I just want to have some informed opinion here." And you do kind of set some ground rules. And when you've been doing it a while, you learn which people. There's some people that are like, "Never, I'm never going to talk to you on the record. I'm happy to help you out and say, you know, at least so you don't sound stupid or whatever, but never quote me," you know. And
makes sense.
It gets easier as you get older, because you're like, "Okay, I'm going to call this person. And I know their ground rules. I'm going to call this person. I know theirs." And it gets easier as you get older, but there's a lot of landmines and I still make, you know, mistakes occasionally and you have to patch things up, and it's crazy.
Yeah, I'm sure. It actually sounds a lot like the college recruiting process, like being a coach in college. Your business is kind of similar, where it's all about information gathering and, yeah, you know, forging relationships and all that kind of stuff. And I always found that there were some people that always had an agenda with what they were telling me. So you knew that there was always that little going on in their head, like they're trying to send a message when they're talking to you. And then there's other people that are just like kind of genuine. Do you find that in your business as well?
Yeah, but it's funny, even if somebody has an agenda, they can still be useful, right? Like, yeah. So if let's say there's a player or an agent and a guy wants out of the, you know, they don't want to say the guy's asking for a trade, but they'll let you know, and you can speculate, or you can say, "Hey, teams are calling on this guy." You know, even if you know, okay, they're mad at the team, or this is an agenda-driven conversation, it's still information, right? And it's still factual. Like, if, you know, and you can call the team and talk to whoever and be like, "Look, I understand this is going on." And if someone's talking to you, they're not doing it just out of the kindness of their hearts, right? Like, there typically isn't an agenda, and you have to kind of work through that filter.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you've been in it a while, so I'm sure the relationships that you have are far and wide. But, you know, in terms of the people that you looked up to when you were getting into the business, you know, who were your mentors coming into the NHL, and who do you think are kind of like the gold standards of guys that really, really do a good job today?
Yeah, so the guy I leaned on heavily in Atlanta was a writer named Jeff Schultz, who was the original Atlanta Thrashers beat writer, and then he had worked his way up to be a columnist at the paper there. And we actually just hired him a couple months ago at The Athletic as part of our Atlanta expansion. And Schultz, he was great. Like, I was just a kid who didn't know what he was doing. And he was, you know, he would say, "Okay, you need to read here's all the hockey writers you need to read every day. You know, this is how you know, here's some people to talk to here. This guy will call you back. This guy won't." And all those little things that it takes a long time to figure out, how to navigate that world. It was great. And not only just those conversations over beers, but like just reading his stuff. And I learned, like, Jeff, he has a sharp critical knife. Like, he could just carve guys, but he always would do it in a very fair way. And, you know, he always showed up the next day in the dressing room and wasn't hiding behind it. And I learned the value of that. Like, if you, you know, you can, as long as you're fair, you can still maintain those relationships, but you also have to be accountable, right? Like you can't say a team is garbage and carve a guy and then you disappear for 2 weeks, right? Like you better be there to have it out if that guy wants to have it out with you, or else you're going to damage that relationship. So I learned a lot just by watching him and then just by learning from him. And in terms of the gold standard, the guy that I was reading and still read is Michael Farber, who is the best hockey writer who's ever lived. And there was a stretch that I wouldn't read his stuff because it made me feel so insecure about my writing. Like I just, probably 5 or 6 years, if Farber would write a story, two things would happen. One, I wouldn't read it because I'm like, gosh, I'll never be able to do that. And two, it would eliminate a topic you could write about because who wants to write the second best story about, you know, Brian Burke? You know what I mean? So like he would write something, he'd be like, oh man, I was going to do that. And now I'm just going to take that off the plate completely because you're not going to outdo it. So Farber is a guy that I look up to still immensely.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Going back to something you just said there about you looking up to him for roasting a guy, then showing up the next day. Have you ever, you know, really given it to a guy and then had to face them relatively soon after? And you don't got to say a name if you don't want to, but just,
yeah.
Any interesting interactions with something like that?
I can tell you, honestly, the guys that I've had it out with that had an issue with what I wrote ended up being people I was the closest with. And it's so funny how that's happened and where they didn't like either a line of questioning. And sometimes that's where it is. Sometimes they don't even read it. They just hear from a relative or something that says, I can't believe this was written about you. And then I'll be like, well, did you even read it? And like, well, no. And we can talk it over. But like more often than not, it's crazy. Like there's this element, there's this time period where they're really mad, but as long as you don't take the cheap shots, they know they played bad or whatever. And if you can hash it out with them, I found that those guys end up being the ones that long-term it kind of forges a relationship there that, I mean, there's a line you cross and I don't, you know, I'm not a huge opinion guy. I'm just trying to get information. And so thankfully I don't have to do a ton of just columnizing The Athletic is not like a hot take place. Like people I find would rather just have information and analysis. And so there's not a ton of that where you just like, this guy should be fired or whatever. But there are times where you have to ask the question, about job security. And just, that's where I find the tough interactions come, where people don't want that question asked. I'll have to tell you guys offline. There's, you know, I've had that. Had that. You know, where you ask the question and they're like, I can't believe you asked that question. Like you, and it's like, well, you understand why I had to ask, right? You and the, no, you, that you that that was out of line. And I'm like, no, you. And it becomes a debate. But then I find it, as long as you can have it out with them, almost it helps keep things healthy. It's the ones that you don't hear from and then never hear from again that end up being bad, right? Like they're mad and they just written you off, and that's where it's unhealthy.
Yeah,
it's kind of like when you're on a team and you're in practice going hard and you wind up fighting each other. Those are the guys I always wound up being closer with after you actually have a real fist fight with in practice, and then later you laugh about it and you're closer.
Yeah, it's funny. And once you're around a while and you know, you're not going anywhere, like you have to make it work, right?
Right.
At some level. So yeah, it's funny how that works out.
Yeah. Well, there are certainly a lot of characters and personalities in the hockey business. Who have been some of the more entertaining people that you've gotten to talk to? You just kind of walking away being like, wow, that was incredible.
That's a great question. Because for the most part, I love those conversations, and I love going into a dressing room, and there's always a couple of guys you kind of gravitate towards. And I just think of it recently because Pierre LeBrun wrote something, but like Drew Doughty is one of those guys I automatically go talk to because he's so honest. I love the guys that just don't care, right? Like they're so confident in their abilities and their standing in the league. And a lot of the young guys, it takes them a few years to get there. But there's certain guys that you just get to a point where Drew Doughty, and I remember last year I, you know, leaned up against the wall, we're chatting in Detroit, and I'm like, hey, have you thought about free agency? And then he just went off about, oh yeah, I talked to Eric Carlson, and like, and it became this huge story, and I'm like, oh, Drew. And then we and we're like, I'm like, you realize this is going to be a thing? And he's like, oh yeah, I know. He like, he knows what he's doing, right? Like, I'm like, okay, as long as we're, you know, on the same page here. And so he's definitely in that camp. You know, every team seems to have a guy. Like, there's some guys who are just great guys. Like, Columbus just came through here, and I was talking to someone about Nick Foligno, and who he's just one of those guys, you can go talk to Nick Foligno at any time about any topic, and he gives a thoughtful, articulate answer that gives insight, and that to me is so valuable, because that's what fans want. They want to understand the game better. They don't want cliches. You know, that's what the media wants. We're not here trying to, like, I'm not trying to get Nick Foligno here. We're asking these questions because we're genuinely curious. And so a guy like that, I also love, because he'll sit there and think about what you're trying to say or ask and give insightful answers. And I love guys like that.
Do you ever get, like, call somebody out when they're doing the cliches? Cause I mean, I remember watching interviews when I was younger, and it, yeah, like, even up until like 5 years ago, it was the same answers all the time. Every answer is literally the same. It's like, come on, to grow this sport, you're allowed to have a personality. And PK Subban, whether people love him or hate him, has his own personality, and he draws fans in. And like a guy like Drew Doughty, like, I'd rather someone say something that people, cliches of, oh, the team did a great job, give it all to the goalie. Right, it's like, come on, like, be yourself. Tell us what you think.
Yeah, but so, I, it's funny, I was just talking about this. You guys know how it is. You've been there. The guy that we love in the media tends to be the guy, and I'm not talking about anyone specific here, but that the teams don't like, or I don't even want to say don't like, but like someone just said, like, look, if you guys like somebody a little too much as media people, that's a red flag for us as like executives, because you know, then they feel it. And I see you shaking your head, and I agree with you. Like, but like, the hockey culture is so much, they want their guys to say, hey, I just want to get pucks in deep and do what's best for the team. And the second a guy breaks out of that mold, then they're labeled as whatever and glory seeking, unless you're Drew Doughty. Somehow Drew Doughty escapes all of that. And maybe because he's great at what he does. But like, I agree with you. I wish there was more people that spoke their mind, but I just feel like guys get crushed when they do. And sometimes it's even by the media. Like, some guy will have an honest opinion, and then the media will crush him. I'm like, what are we doing here? Like, this guy finally says something interesting and we're going to crush him. Like, the last thing I want to do is contribute to this hockey culture of everybody saying the same thing, because it drives me crazy sometimes.
How do you feel about that, Toph? Have you been on the other side as being a coach? If you have a guy step out and like, speak their mind or just even have a personality. It seems like if you have too much personality, like he just said, like Craig just said, like the front office is kind of like, oh, is this guy like all about himself? And
yeah,
you know, like, what do you feel about that, Toph?
I think people got to be themselves, you know, like it's one of those things where I think gone are the days of the same coach preaching the same values to the same players. You know, you just don't get the most out of people. You look at, you know, the Golden State Warriors, and you look at the Cubs, and you look at, you know, some of these guys going in and doing things differently. You know, John Cooper, even in Tampa Bay, like, they're letting guys be themselves and they're having more fun, and it's just different than kind of how we grew up in hockey locker rooms. And coaching at Cornell, I mean, that was about as buttoned up as you can come. With the culture that we had, and it worked because, you know, that was kind of our personality and our identity. But I definitely think it's from the media side of things and from just letting guys be themselves. I think that's important for sure. So moving on, Craig, I wanted to ask you, because I read your book Behind the Bench, and it was awesome. Like, it was one of the best sports books I've read, and I've read a lot of them. Just the insight that I think people get into the minds of the coaches and just the way that you did it, I think was so cool. How'd you get the idea for it? And tell us a little bit about that process of, you know, interviewing all these guys and going through some of the best moments they've had in their careers.
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, it was one of those things, once I had the idea, I was like, even if I don't write a book, having done this would be a cool experience. Like, sitting down with these coaches, watching film with them, and I mean, I knew I'd have to write it, but like, even if it doesn't sell a copy or nobody likes it, like, having done it would have been such a cool thing. And the seed was planted for the idea a long time ago. and it's, I mentioned this in the book, but Ken Hitchcock, when he was in Columbus, he brought us in, we'd done our scrum, and I don't know if he broke down film, but we were off the record, and he talked for another like 15, 20 minutes explaining some system stuff and why exactly he was doing what he was doing. And I remember walking away from that, and I'm like, it was the first, I was really young, kind of just starting out. And I was like, that I learned more in that 20 minutes than I've done in a million coach press conferences and scrums, because cameras were off, the recorders were off. It was just a hockey guy trying to share his knowledge. And I'm like, and I planted that seed, and I'm like, man, it would be so cool to have that opportunity with coaches and sit down. And I think my initial thought in doing that book was that it was going to be much more technical. Like, what were you thinking when you sent out this power play in game 7 of the Stanley Cup final or whatever? And it ended up just being more, and I kind of let each coach take it wherever they wanted to take it, but ended up being kind of more like philosophical and leadership principles and a lot of stuff that these coaches are passionate about, and which is fine. Like, I just think anything you can learn from these people that have accomplished so much is great. And it was cool, because the concept for the listener is I sat down with 10 coaches and watched kind of their one of the most memorable games with them and wrote kind of a chapter on each one. And I was worried that the chapters would be repetitive just because, you know, you're doing the same thing. And each coach was so different personality wise and what they wanted to talk about and, you know, their memories that they brought up, that it really worked. And it was a credit to the coaches and their willingness to do it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Was there one that kind of stuck out to you just in terms of the moment? I mean, there was Olympic golds, there were Stanley Cups. Was there one that just you walked out of there just head shaking, like, wow, was that incredible?
I mean, they all were good. It's like choosing your favorite kid. But I mean, Mike Babcock's great, because him and I have a lot of this. Like, I'm constantly reading like leadership books. I'm a big nerd when it comes to that stuff. So like, I love talking that language with Mike, and he enjoys it. And so it was very philosophical about what he is learning from other industries and meeting with CEOs and all the stuff he does outside of hockey to get better at coaching. And I walked away and I just felt like I had learned so much. And I'm like, okay, if I can even translate this a little bit for the reader, it's going to be really valuable. And so like from that perspective, it was cool. And then the sitting down with John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan, who are best friends, and watching two back-to-back games with them in the same room. I actually just ran into John Tortorella, and he's like, he brought it up again. He's like, that was so cool to do. It was like, you could tell they were enjoying it as friends and having that opportunity. And I didn't know John really well going into that, and only knew him from press conferences. And he could be, as you guys know, a little short and angry and short in terms of his temperament. And he was so good. It was the middle of the summer, and you know, we had nowhere to be and just had nothing but time. And he opened up so much about kind of regrets he had and situations he handled. And we even got into the time the Bob Hartley fight in Vancouver or Calgary, wherever that was. And it was a side of him I hadn't seen. And I that was another one where I walked away. I was like, okay, I had no idea how that was going to go, because I didn't know him really well. And I was just so excited about what came out of it.
Yeah, that's really cool. Going back to Mike Babcock, it's really interesting. So I run a team building business right now, and I've gone to a bunch of different colleges and done team building. And Mike Babcock's kid actually goes to Merrimack. And so I went there and did it with them. And it was really interesting. He was the guy, like, he was taking notes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, I kind of talk about all these books that I've read. So he came up to me afterwards and he was like, hey, yeah, I've read that one and that one and that one and that one. And what did you think about this one? And it's just like, oh my God, that. You are definitely Mike Babcock's kid. This is really cool. But I remember watching him play even, when he was playing in Cedar Rapids in the USHL, and just as honest and hardworking as they come. And it was really cool to kind of just not know Mike Babcock, but know what he's about just from reading about him and listening to him talk, and then just seeing his kid just kind of
the thing about Mike is I mean, he approached it the exact way you would think. Like, we sit down, and it was funny to watch how each coach, you know, some guys would just kick back and put their feet up and we were going to go down memory lane. Mike gets a pad of paper out and a pen and he's writing down line combinations. Oh, that worked. Okay, look how he drives to the middle. And he's taking notes. He's like, okay, that's a clip I can use. And he didn't want, you know, it was an interview, but it was also a window of time where he was going to try to get any information he could out of that game to use moving forward. And I think that captures Mike pretty well.
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely. Well, don't want to take up too much of your time here, but the last thing we wanted to ask you is we are, you know, we're new podcasters here and you have a great podcast going right now in the Full 60. So just wanted to ask you how that came about and how you're enjoying doing it. And if you have any advice for rookies like us, what we could be doing better, you know?
Yeah, no, you guys are doing great from what I can tell. What advice? It's funny because I had really no idea what I was doing right on down to how to edit it. And, you know, so there was a lot of trial and error there. And I just ended up letting my kind of natural instincts, like I'm just curious about people. And so rather than trying to make it kind of the hot topic of the day in hockey, which is fine. And that's, you know, we weigh in on that stuff and at The Athletic, I just let my own curiosity drive it. And I like to learn about people's background and how they got where they are. And so like advice would be just, you know, I mean, you guys are already there, but like whatever you're passionate about, like that's what should be the focus of the podcast. And the other thing I would say is don't try to be everything for all people. Like there's people that think my podcast, you know, cause it's an hour long in-depth conversations and they're like, they want to hear about the big hit last night and it's just not for them. And I'm like, it's okay. We're not going to debate the goal last night. And there's 15 other podcasts you can listen to. I would say you're going to find your niche and your audience. Cater to those people. They're going to be super passionate about it and make sure you're serving them and not try to be everything for everybody.
Great advice.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us. Your work with The Athletic is unreal. And when you asked me to contribute to what you guys were doing last year, that was a really, really cool thing. So thank you for that. And thank you for all the work that you do for the hockey world. You certainly add a lot of value. And we look forward to reading what you have to come.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. It was fun. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Craig. Appreciate it.